Welcome to the podcast. In today's episode, I'm going to be speaking with the VP of People for SNCC, Dipti Salopek. Dipti and I are going to cover a range of how she is guiding their company and employees through the COVID-19 outbreak, and we're also going to talk about their decision to open source their own response plans. Dipti and SNCC were actually the second response plans added to the open source Google Doc after Coinbase got the ball rolling by opening theirs at the very early stages of this. So we're going to talk about all of that and more after a brief word from our sponsor. 21st Century HR is a podcast exploring how to build better businesses through modern people practices and approaches. It's brought to you by my firm, Amplify. Amplify provides HR executive search and strategic consulting services that help companies build better organizations. From employer brand development and execution to global talent strategies, Amplify develops custom solutions that help clients from Hootsuite to SpaceX optimize their recruiting capabilities. Amplify also hosts a new community for HR leaders called the Ecosystem. The Ecosystem was designed to bring modern HR leaders around the world together to share ideas, inspiration, and support. Learn more at amplifytalent.com. Hey everyone, welcome to the 21st Century HR Podcast. I'm your host, Lars Schmidt, and I am very excited to be joined today by the VP of People for SNCC, Dipti Salopek. Dipti and I are going to talk about how she is leading their global team and operations through COVID-19 and really talk about all the kind of back-end HR and people mechanics that support the dynamic decision-making that's taking place. So just as a quick timestamp, today is Friday, March 27th. This episode is going to air on Monday. So anything that happens between now and Monday will not be reflected in this discussion. So Dipti, thanks so much for coming on. If you wouldn't mind, why don't you give the listeners just a brief introduction and background on you?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Lars. So I'm Dipti Salopek. I am the VP of People at SNCC. I have been in the tech startup space for a long time now, knocking on 10 years maybe, and I enjoy it. It's at the best of times, it's incredibly vibrant and maybe even volatile, and it's never been more so than right now. And for me, it's something that I really enjoy and grasp.
Yeah, and so there's a lot that I want to cover with you in terms of how you're kind of leading SNCC through this. But even before we get there, like, how are you doing? I know you're based in New York, I believe. So obviously there's a lot going on at this stage of the outbreak in New York. So how are you?
I'm fortunate enough to be well. No one in my family or my immediate friend circle has actually gotten ill. It's something that I'm very conscious of and watching. I do know that colleagues in our company haven't been as lucky themselves, and so it's not something that I take lightly or for granted. But right now, I'm doing as well as I could be, and I'm very fortunate for that.
Yeah, and so, New York is obviously experiencing the brunt of this in the U.S., right now, and for the most part is on lockdown. How is that impacting, your life, your employees' life? I know you have employees around the world, but, you've got a big hub in New York. So what is the what is the kind of perspective today of what it's like to be there in New York?
So we are incredibly lucky, and we normally live in a small apartment in Manhattan, but we also have a little house that's a couple hours away out in the countryside. And so we've actually absconded there for the past couple of weeks, but I keep closely in touch with my friends in the city, and they're incredibly concerned and they're taking quarantine very seriously, but unfortunately not all New Yorkers are. And half of me understands that people need to go out. People are living in small apartments and it can drive you crazy to be in quarantine. But the other half of me finds it so disappointing and just so incredibly irresponsible. I think, like, to me, I'm genuinely worried about where we are in the city and how people still aren't recognizing the full gravity of the situation.
Yeah, I think that is certainly a reality in a lot of cities. I think New York just has so much unique complexity to it just based on the density alone and public transit and lots of people living in studio apartments and, just really confined spaces. So it's a really difficult, situation that I'm glad at least for you yourself, you're able to get outside the city to hopefully ride this out for a while. I want to get into how, SNCC has been responding, but for listeners that aren't familiar with the company. Maybe if we could just level set, if you just give a bit of an overview of, you know, the business and the operations and where you have people today.
Yeah, sure. So firstly, just to understand what Snyk is, we're a developer-focused cybersecurity firm. So essentially, in a world where software development is kind of cannibalizing every industry we can see, whether it's e-commerce or finance or whatever, there's an incredible amount of pressure on engineering teams to ship code quicker, faster, to scale quickly. And so teams are relying more and more on open source, where they're getting their codes from, which is phenomenal, but also importing unvetted code can introduce a lot of vulnerabilities into your infrastructure. I mean, you see all the time, there's a breach in Capital One, there's a breach in some cards in different companies. These come from vulnerabilities in your infrastructure. So what Snyk does is we're scanning these vulnerabilities from open source code and fixing them. And that's how we're helping developers just write code that's more secure and faster. Right? As a company, we're 300 employees. Until I would say this specific blip, we've been growing incredibly fast. We've been doubling in size every 6 months. We have hub offices in Tel Aviv, London, Boston, and Ottawa. And 25% of our workforce that's just remote and works from, well, wherever we can find talent, to be honest.
Yeah. And so, you know, the offices in the cities where you have hubs, you know, some of those, you know, London obviously are kind of on the, you know, in the spot with an increasing number of cases. How are you adapting your kind of response plans per region? Do you have a blanket approach? Like, how are you, you know, are you localizing your responses? And if so, how?
We initially started with that, but honestly, that I've got to say that was like 4 weeks ago and it's outdated. And since then, we have tried to stay as globally consistent as possible because the first thing we saw is that the virus has been such an equalizer. So it kind of doesn't matter what country, what race, what gender, what social class, like nobody's immune from it and everyone's equally exposed and equally vulnerable. And so we kind of took a step back. What I've found is not like our policies that have been the differentiator globally, but rather the government responses. So Israel, where we have a big office, like I was saying in Tel Aviv, the government was 2 or 3 weeks ahead of anything we saw in the US. Like we weren't even talking about it here. And already in Israel, they were talking about travel bans and quarantining and shutting borders. And we ended up taking so many of our cues from them, learning from their information rather than our own government. And I'm really glad, I'm thankful for it because it's because of that that I feel like Snyk, we were 2 or 3 weeks ahead of the curve on a lot of the activities we implemented. And like in UK, they're only starting, I think like as of 2 days ago, the government was talking about now quarantining people and stuff. But our employees, but we kind of moved to remote work a couple weeks ago. And our employees were honestly so grateful. They finally felt that someone was taking their well-being seriously. And like, I could just see the memes and jokes about what the government was doing. So it's really the governments that I've seen huge disparities in. But like, we as a company have kind of taken the stance that globally, we're going to treat everyone the same and care about everyone in the same way.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I think companies that have global operations, particularly those with operations in Asia, you know, and even EMEA, they had some advance warning, right? Because their operations there were impacted. And so I think that this got on their radar much earlier, which, you know, the velocity at which this kind of spread and you know, became such a global phenomenon happened within a, you know, period of, you know, for those that weren't paying attention, seemingly days. Right. And for those who were and had operations that were, you know, either had countries and governments that were ahead of the curve or, you know, operations that were facing kind of peak pandemic earlier in the process, I think that they had definitely an advantage when it came to preparing. Speaking of preparing, one of the things that we had talked about even before this podcast was your contribution to that open source, you know, Google Doc around coronavirus HR comms. And I think is as a collective, if you will, right, as HR leaders around the world, you know, we were all looking in a lot of ways to each other and to our kind of peer networks around how other organizations were responding to help that, you know, inform how we would advise our own leadership teams. And I think, you know, Coinbase was the first company to kind of go out and open source theirs. But Snyk and, you know, you were the second. And I want to make sure that you do get that credit. I know you didn't do it for the credit, but I think it's important to recognize leaders that were stepping up and kind of paving the way to, you know, a lot of ways encourage, you know, other HR leaders to share their own work and their own playbook. But what was the thought process behind your, you know, what compelled you to share that? Why was it important to you to contribute back?
Yeah, for a lot of reasons, but I'd say first, even when you think about our company, our mission is around protecting and supporting open source. So we believe so strongly that in the value of open source for the greater good of the community as a whole, right? So it's just an underlying value system. But then on top of that, when we're in crisis, like that's not a time to compete with each other. That's not a time to harbor information and try and get that edge over someone else. This is a crisis that's affecting society as large. And it was just a moment when we absolutely knew that if there was anything that we could produce that could help anyone else out there, then we're super happy to. And even like those guides that I feel like they're outdated now because we published them so long
right.
ago. But still today, I'm getting notes from people that are like, I'm so grateful that we had this source of support. So it makes you realize that there's always someone out there somewhere that actually still might need something. So the more you can just push out there that you might not even need anymore, that can help someone else in a crisis like this, that's amazing. And I would say that we might have been early on that because like we had the geographic advantage, like some of those things you referenced, but we were not the only ones at all. The HR community as a whole has really stepped up in a way that I've never experienced before and to such a different extent. And I kind of feel like there's no going back from the level of collaborativeness we've built now. It's amazing to see how we've come together as a community. And I hope it's a precedent for how we collaborate on a lot of things going forward.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, I think that the level of, you know, A, just the mindset that we're all in this together. You know, and again, like you said, it's not, it's no longer a competition thing. It's like, it's a collective. It's how do we all help each other? Because basically what one company you know, learns from a process, if everybody can tap into that and accelerate their own learning by, you know, even incrementally, there's an advantage to that. And there's a collective advantage when everybody can do that. So I think that the days of kind of working in silos of legacy HR, I think are fundamentally shifting. And to a person, anybody who is able to kind of tap into that, that open source, you know, capability and understanding is going to be better for it. And they're going to be, you know, more effective for it. And so, yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be hard to go back to an environment that, that is again, you know, more built on silos than openness. Once we're on the other side of this, whenever that might be.
Exactly. Absolutely.
You know, how do you, you know, as this continues to unfold, you obviously have, you know, 300 employees, they're all around the world. How are you working and kind of collaborating with your leadership team to be making kind of adjustments on a week to week or even day to day or hour to hour kind of basis as this continues to unfold?
Yeah. Firstly, I should just say I'm so incredibly proud of our people team within Sneak, of our executive team, of the employees who have like adapted to this as we have, right? Like literally within days, we moved to, oh, we got to clean our offices to actually, we're just going to work from home to actually, there's going to be a global travel ban to then it was, you had your children at home and we had to figure out how to work with that. I mean, like every single day, there was something new. And we've adapted to it incredibly fast. And the first thing I should say is like, and you don't always get this as a people leader, so I really want to call it out, that we have here an executive team that truly puts people first. And that means that every time I have suggestions, feedback, I want time, I want sponsorship, I want attention, I want support, there is no hurdle and no shortage of support on any of those fronts. So that's been an amazing experience to be empowered to react as quickly as we would want to react. We've created a subset of the executive team that meets 2 to 3 times a week. So we're constantly triaging it. Everyone's sharing updates. You know, we have our CFO looking externally at the state of the economy and what's happening there. We have me looking internally at all of the employee feedback, me looking externally at trends in what other companies are doing and reacting to different things. So we keep triaging this and course correcting in a very agile manner on a constant basis. So we are changing our approach by hours and by days, literally. And I like that the agility of how we're approaching it. I think, you know, when I think of our decisions, ultimately, we have two principles that have guided us right from the beginning and kind of continue to guide us, and that helps make decision making faster. One of them is like the well-being of our sneakers is paramount. So if that meant we stopped global travel earlier than everyone else, if it meant we moved to remote work earlier than everyone else, like all of that, there was no compromising on the well-being of our sneaker community, right? And one classic example is suddenly all these parents, which is more than 50% of our sneakers, had their kids at home all of a sudden and didn't know how to deal with that. And we went out and very explicitly said, hey, look, this is a time of crisis and it's family first. So focus on your family, focus on what you need to do, focus on your well-being and that of your kids. And then if you have time, whatever cycles you have, we do need to keep the company afloat. So we're grateful for whatever you can give back, and please do. But like family first. And just putting that out there, the amount of relief and gratitude we've got from people that we just recognize that individually and personally, they were in crisis, right? So that's one. It's the well-being of our sneakers. But the other one is a larger responsibility to society as a whole. And this guides a ton of what we do, whether it's through the donations we're making, whether it's through, and I see it a lot of times, there's a ton of links circulating within our Slack channels about how you can volunteer. Like they're looking for engineers, they're looking for data crunchers, they're looking for design architects. So we have a ton of specialists that can spend their time helping further the cause, helping relief efforts across the world. And so just with that, when I think of our own policies, the decision to move to remote, the decision to enforce social distancing way before governments required it, it was part of us saying, hey, look, this is our responsibility to society at large, right? It's not convenient for us as a company, but it's the right thing to do for our sneakers and our society. So it's like, it's those moments, every time a tough decision has come up, we've always gone back to these principles, and that suddenly makes it not a tough decision anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. And I think, you know, you're right, like having employee, I mean, it's one of the questions that I heard a lot, particularly, you know, I think we're at the end of week two for most people, at least in the US, you know, working from home, mostly with, you know, with their kids. And so I think a lot of HR leaders were, I saw a lot of people talking about, you know, how are companies treating that, and how are they adapting to that, and are they creating any policies around that? And then I was, you know, I was in one thread where it was just like, if there's ever a time to not have a policy, it's this. Like, this is not a policy situation. Like, this is a human situation. This is an empathetic situation. Like, we have to understand what our employees are going through and what they're facing, and be there for them, and honor those feelings that they have, and realize, like, of course, you know, work needs to get done. But the idea that we can just kind of, you know, flip, you know, turn everything upside down and expect employees to still be hitting the same kind of milestones and productivity expectations, this just is not realistic. So it's refreshing to hear how you've thought about that, you know, with your sneaker population as this unfolded. The shift to obviously most employees, sounded like about 75%, you know, came into an office. Now they're not. You know, what was that transition like, and kind of what technology and tools are you using to support this new kind of remote work transition?
Yeah, well, we were, from a tool and infrastructure perspective, we were well set up from the beginning, right? So a lot of our communication was asynchronous. So we used the usual suspects. We use Slack, we use Zoom. We use, as a kind of wiki / intranet, we use Notion, where a lot of people use Confluence, but it's very similar. We use Google Suite. I mean, so all the standard collaboration tools, we already had them in place, and we already had a culture of using them. So infrastructure is probably the easiest part of moving to a work from home. The harder part was this cultural element of actually, like, just losing the water cooler conversations and the chatter.
Yeah.
Like any office we walked into, it was just, there's a high energy exuberance in our office. And so suddenly that dip, so I think it's that combined with isolation, right? So we're not even telling people work from home. We're saying stay in your home and maybe only go out once a day. That's a very extreme thing for people to adjust to. So we've kind of tried to cater to it in a bunch of different ways. First is we very early on, we created guides for both employees and managers on work from home. And this isn't our brainchild. We adapted it to the sneaker environment, but there's honestly companies like Zapier as an instance that have done this before, and we could use their precedents as a guide. So we're always grateful to other companies that open source their information. But the most amazing part in this was honestly, when we moved to total work from home or remote work, it was watching our remote employees themselves, who had been a minority so far and sometimes struggled to get, you know, a voice at the table, all of a sudden they stepped up. They were offering advice. They were offering support. They were offering emotional support to help others adjust to that environment. It was amazing to watch. And it was kind of beautiful just sitting back and watching the strength of this culture and community that we were all building kind of show itself in this moment of crisis. You know, I always think the situation is best managed if the people team kind of doesn't need to get involved and if it happens organically amongst the employees themselves, because that's when you know a culture is really strong. So just watching that was cool. I think, you know, what started off as a remote work challenge, like how do you keep people engaged and how do you get them used to working from home with tools, culture, process, et cetera, suddenly became a human challenge, right? It was like people having their kids at home, people having parents at home that they're caring for, that they're nervous about, people suffering from isolation. So I think we very quickly pivoted from, hey, how do we increase productivity and remote work into something that was much more about how do we engage people emotionally? So like for those that employees that are stuck in their own apartments, so like where there's a fear of isolation, we are actually seeing employees organically coming together. We're having remote karaoke sessions, remote talent shows, daily coffee chats, remote gaming competitions. Just today, we had a remote surprise birthday party for the founder and president of our company. So, you know, we're really trying to do a whole bunch of things that are trying to cater to both people who have their kids at home and so are under stress of like a lot of people stuck together in one little space, and the people who are isolated and actually have no one and have the stress of just that isolation. But our focus is very dominantly right now on these human impacts as opposed to how do we gain productivity? Because that's happening on its own and we feel very comfortable with that area.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And I think it's interesting, like the whole idea of having a workplace team that's usually focused on physical locations. And now It's all about kind of making, you know, maintaining connections and finding like lots of those programs, like you mentioned, to keep employee engaged. And obviously understanding that different employees based on their own circumstances are going to be in different places and have different needs. You know, and so I think it's great that you're thinking about it that way. What, you know, in terms of internal communications, what, you know, how has it changed your internal comms kind of cadence? What kind of frequency methods, et cetera, are you using to keep your employees, you know, just abreast of what's happening?
Yeah, we actually double down on communications. I'd say this is the one thing that very early in this process, we were like, we just need to over-communicate till people are sick of hearing, but like, we don't want any one person being lost in the midst of everything, right? So we definitely have Slack, and there's a ton of chatter on Slack, and we keep a good pulse on that and feel like employees are very engaged. You can see it from the level of activity. But then the other thing we did is the executive team now does weekly AMA or Ask Me Anything sessions where they give all hands updates as well. So we moved that to a weekly cadence where we used to have it monthly. We have weekly meetings with our managers where they can ask us questions, but we also disseminate a ton of information. So a lot of what we're trying to do is just empower our managers with as much information as possible, because we're trying to move the activity and decision-making to be as close to the front lines as we possibly can. We've kind of doubled down on two different newsletters that go out weekly, one from the people team, one with business updates. So, you know, and at first when we pulled this cadence together, I looked at it and I was like, wow, that's a lot. Like, we're inundating people. But every time I talk to employees and I kind of ask them, they're just grateful. All of them are like, no, right now, this is the kind of communication we need. you know, just thank you for everyone for putting the effort into it. So it made me realize how easy it is to underestimate when you're in the planning process, when you're the person who's actually in the planning decision, you kind of feel like all this stuff is obvious out there and we're spamming people and we're doing too much. But when you're at the other end, when you're the recipient of all this, it's such a different perspective and experience. So I keep asking people and you know, it's right now it seems like this level of over-communication is really what people need and what they're hanging on to.
And let's, you know, last question for you, Dipti. When you think about, obviously a lot of listeners are the peers of yours, they're HR leaders who are kind of working to guide their own companies, you know, organizations and teams through this. What advice would you have for people leaders who are you know, really, you know, wanting to make the most, you know, impact and support for their companies and their teams?
It's a good question. I would say don't get caught in reactive. Like, take your head above water long enough and often enough that you can anticipate what's coming down the pike and prepare for it. Like, we as an executive team, and including myself, spend a significant proportion of our time just externally focused, like identifying what's happening in the industry, what's happening with other companies, reaching out to our VC partners to find out what's going on in kind of the economy at large. Like, that's the stuff that allows us to get ahead of it. So we're not kind of back-footed or not in this reactive mode. So if there's any piece of advice, I'd say, like, offense is your best defense. Try and keep ahead of it.
Great. Well, Dipti, thanks so much for coming on, for sharing your experience, and certainly for contributing to the open source guide. I know a lot of people, and I'm glad you're getting the feedback from others who are benefiting from it. So thanks for your leadership on open source and everything else. And I really appreciate you sharing your approach and definitely want to wish you the best as this continues to unfold.
Thank you, Lars. And the same to you. And thank you for, you're the one who pulled the document together in the first place. So I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 21st Century HR. If you want to hear more episodes like this or read stories from the 21st Century HR Fast Company series, go to 21stcenturyhr.com. And if you want to make your podcast just a little more awesome, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or whatever podcast platform your ears desire. You'll find all the subscribe links on the website. And if you enjoy the podcast, do me a favor and share it with your peers, your network, your boss, and your CEO. Help me get the podcast into the ears of anyone who wants to know what HR and recruiting looks like when done really well. They'll thank you for it, and so will I. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next episode.